Welcome, and thank you all very much for coming here today. I would like to...
But ultimately, you know, you sit back and you say to yourself, there's not much you can do if the entire world is against you. And that's what it is when it comes to textiles. There was no way to turn it around. You can offer more grants. You can say, please stay on for another while, we'll give you more money. But that is only buying jobs, and it's not a realistic approach.
The socioeconomic profile with proposals for future development is a documentary that's been done by Donna Consultants.
It was a way of life to me. I knew nothing else, and I had no idea where was I going to go, what way I was going to go, and what was going to happen to me. It was like a part of my life was over.
On the last day, I was sort of like a lost sheep, you could say, because all the units had sort of gone, but me and a few more girls, we read out stuff, you know, stuff like scissors and that the girls had left behind, you know, and loose change and that, and that was all sort of through onto the poor boxes and that, you know. And I said, what am I standing here for? If Muhammad can't come to the mountain will go to Muhammad. So I went down, got me money, and had a bed, and that was it.
But it was just like any other day. Nothing to mark it as the last day working in the company. The managers came out, wished us well. It was similar to somebody retiring, but without the ceremony.
And we always loved sending the penny to the black babies, and it's a problem for some that now those black babies, if you pardon the expression, have now got to the stage where they do need a job as well, as instead of a penny sent to them. And therefore, we have to grow up and we have to expect and accept that everyone has the right to develop. The African countries, all the third world countries, they have the right to develop.
In relation to their operations in Donegal, all of my efforts and that of the IDA and that of my predecessor have been with a view to maintaining as many jobs as possible in Donegal. If T-shirts can be made for 15% of the cost in Morocco, then it's obvious what the consequences of that are.
If it's one thing the sea teaches us, it's that nothing stays the same for long. There are tides that bring plenty, tides that destroy. Now Buncrana was washed up on its own shore. This was the town that created the factory girls, but the company that employed most of them was moving on. 5 years after the place had taken its first hit, I came back to find out what the factory girls were doing, and to see if they could help me make sense of the tides turning.
How are things in Morocco? Your northwestern shore. Here got independent. No France or Spain anymore. And you've got industry coming. It's coming soon to build up your country. Your country. Blessed be the fruit of the loom.
My name is Willie MacArthur, and my family have been in the textiles business in Buncrana since 1932, including Fruit of the Loom from 1987 onwards. Although I left Fruit of the Loom, as did my other family members in 1997, 1998. Well, the 1980s were very difficult years in general. We did okay because we were contracting for Adidas and Levi and people like that. But there were very, very competitive conditions, very high inflation rates. And indeed, one of the reasons that we decided around 1985 to seek a joint venture in the US was because of the difficult conditions, and they thought we could do a job for Fruit of the Loom, and they ended up investing around $200 million in what I think was the largest vertical complex of its type in the world, where raw cotton and the bale and polyester came into Derry, was spun in the spinning mill, which is still there at Campsie. Some knitting was done there. More knitting was done on Buncrana. Bleaching and dyeing, cutting, sewing, sewing in Buncrana, in Derry, in Mullinhead, in Milford, and Raphoe, and we were setting up in Dunloe when things came to a halt.
The first thing that would strike you when you entered through the loom would be the noise. The noise was terrible. It would be, say, like 100 bulldozers all going at the one time. The noise was really, really loud. And the next thing that would strike you would be the heat. Now, really, really warm. And the summertime times, it was very hard to put up with a stick, as I would call it. The noise and the heat, and you take the noise then of the radio and all people chatting. When for the loom was at its best, there were at least 700 on the floor at the one time. So you take the noise of machines, the noise of girls, the noise of radio, all at the one time. That was some noise.
It was very fast. Very different from anything I had experienced previously, because I worked in hospitals as an auxiliary nurse prior to getting married. I found it chalk and cheese working in a hospital and with patients in comparison to working with individuals who seemed to feel that speed was of the essence. Everything had to be on time. Minutes, seconds were counted. No time could be lost. You were given 6 minutes to fold 12 t-shirts. And maybe by the end of an 8.5 hour day, you had 500 garments folded.
Oh, you got into a rhythm. It was like when you looked, all you could see was work going through the machine, you know. I would say today, there is a lot of people have got stuffed necks and stuffed joints, you know. Through nobody's fault, it was just the way the system worked. It mightn't have been physically hard, but I would say for a lot it was mentally hard. You know, like, you know, you were trying to concentrate on your work, and people had wains at home, and them kind of things. All, but we were always taught that no matter how big your problem was in your personal life, you never took it into me, you never took it into work with you.
He's all doing that. Is this your ICA meeting?
Yes.
We're thinking of treating the men, so we are. But don't worry, don't tell me.
And do you mind Valentine's Day with the flowers and
the flowers? Oh, yes. Valentine's Day with flowers.
You swear you're in a florist shop. One bunch was nice on the other.
Christmas was fabulous. The whole sewing room was covered in decorations. All the machines were linked up right along the floor. 600 machinists at one stage. Balloons, you name it.
And them going up periodically.
And a tinsel.
That's right.
Everything. And then if you had your sweet wrappers, you made hats and stuck the sweet wrappers onto the hats, and you went down. Well, the company provided you with a Christmas dinner.
That's right.
And
you went down there. And a Santa Claus hat. Yeah. Made me the tassel, didn't they? And if it came. Good fun, you know.
Oh yeah, we had good times.
We had good times, you know. Remember when they were sort of starting off first at Lower Ballymacarry, when they didn't have enough work, meant to keep the gears going. Mind they sent up the town for a video for us to watch the Gremlins.
The Gremlins. The video.
Oh. But no, not going to that.
But the place must have been rife with gossip when you were all them women in the one building.
Hold on a minute. There was men there too. And let me tell you, they're as good a gossip as any woman has.
They say there's nobody chats like women, but
no.
My experience today is men chat every bit and gossip every bit as much as women.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But stories must have just grown legs.
Oh, like an octopus. Beating legs everywhere. You got a wee bit. I gotta get a wee bit.
Yeah, like the Chinese whisper.
I'm ready to get a wee bit. But, you know, she remembered Gerge.
You know, all the rumours and one thing and another that happened about redundancy and one thing. But you know, 99% rumour always turned out to be 100%
fact.
Fact.
Oh, yeah.
Believe it or not, you know.
Yeah, aye.
You know, well, everybody may got a wee bit, but it all come around that it was all 100% fact.
Fact.
It may have took a few weeks to make it that way, but it did come around.
Mm. Yeah.
That's just how you say in Sally, there's no smoke without fire.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Right.
And that period where you felt, you know, something was happening, something was afoot, you know, the signs weren't good, but nobody was coming out and saying anything, that must have been...
That was hell.
We here had developed a plan, which was, because we had set up sewing in Morocco, having looked at quite a number of locations, we'd set up sewing in Morocco to, because... All companies were doing that to take advantage of low-cost labour. And as Ben Dunn, who was a customer of ours, and I knew him for quite a number of years, Ben said to me one time about something or other, you might as well try to keep the tide out of Phoenix Harbour. You might as well be trying to keep the tide out of Phoenix Harbour, keep the tide out of Buncrana Harbour, as try to think that you're going to keep all those jobs in Ireland, because you basically can't. If you don't run with the tide, you won't be there anyways.
Well, when the workers first got news that Fruit of the Loom was opening up in Morocco, they were concerned about their own jobs. Because on occasions, work would become scarce. And the workers thought, well, if it's getting scarce at home now, what's it not going to be like when Morocco opens? Who's going to feed Morocco?
Well, Morocco to me was just a country. I have no great detail about the country. I presumed in my own head it was a poor country. For the Loom, reasons for going were, from a business point of view, cheap labour, and they'll get the t-shirts and sweatshirts made a lot cheaper. From a business point of view, you could understand them. From our point of view, it was taking our jobs away. But other than that, we had no control over the situation. Even with the best will in the world, they were going to go on and do what they were going to do, and they weren't going to stay just for us.
Your country, blessed be the fruit of the loom.
A friend of mine is a long-standing customer of Fruit of the Looms. In the beginning, deliveries used to arrive in boxes proudly packed by, say, John McLaughlin, Buncrana, Ireland. Now they come proudly packed by Mohammed Ramouni, Rabat. Behind the scenes, as production shifted from one continent to the other, were workers from Buncrana.
Well, when we were told going to Morocco, I asked the question, where is Morocco? Because I didn't know where it was. I was told it was in the north coast of Africa. They set up a new plant out there, and they were still on the construction end of it when we arrived out there. So we had to take the new sewing machines that they had purchased for the charity, set them up and commission them, and then get the gears on. And then we had to recruit Moroccan maintenance personnel and train them. I was there originally for about 7 or 8 months. We lived there, so we just basically started the supply.
And the job that I was out there to do, body language had a lot to do with it. You know, I could point and show them how to do something and they could watch and do it. And if they were making a mistake, it's easily to point it out.
And I'm sure some people must have asked you when you come back, how did things like pay and conditions in the factory compare with here? Did they ask? Were locals curious here as to what the conditions were there?
Well, to be honest, I think by the time I got to Fruit, it was up and running a few years, and I think they all had that information back home before I got there. So, you know, but no, Fruit was, as far as the gears was all, they were all quite happy to be employed in it. So there must have been something good for them, you know. And again, because of the language barrier, you couldn't get into that with any of the locals because they wouldn't have been fit to explain. So it wasn't a case of being fit to straight communicate with any of them about that?
I don't actually know the pay rates. Wasn't discussed at my level. I know it was much less expensive. I remember hearing English managers in the hotel, because there was lots of English companies there. There was lots of companies there, but even some of the companies were actually leaving Morocco when we were arriving there, going to cheaper places like Russia, Pakistan, India, which were even cheaper than Morocco. So they were moving on as we were moving on there. I think the reason being was that they'd moved there first, and some of the garments they were making were being made in them countries. So they had to move to the country that was competing with them.
Oh, well, as I said to you right there, we won a few, we lost a few. And as I said, when you were there, you know, you had to look past the personality that you were dealing with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you weren't going on there to argue with a personality. You were there to argue for your rights.
Nothing to do with the person.
No, nothing to do with the
just
person.
Just the issue in hand.
Cross that way, yeah. but that wasn't actually the...
Just the issue in hand.
That was it.
I mean, it will be interesting to see what kind of an ethos there is in among workers and management in Morocco, whether there will be the same culture of standing up for yourself there.
I wouldn't think so. I definitely wouldn't think so. I don't know, I don't know when they used to hear it, if they do have a trade union, because a lot of them, countries, you know, that is a taboo subject. So really and truly, you know, whether there is a union in existence, I wouldn't imagine so, and I don't know, to be honest, I couldn't remark on it.
But while we were in the company and we inquired about the conditions and the rates of pay and what have you for the Moroccans, were they anything similar to our own, we were just told that they're happy with it. They're in similar working conditions to our own, and the rate of pay is second to none for them out there.
That spoke volumes.
I wanted to go there and meet the workers, see for myself how factory work had changed their lives. So I sent my request to Fruit of the Loom in Rabat. I asked Bridie to come with me and recruited a Moroccan journalist, Hisham Houdafa, to act as our guide and interpreter. He reported back that our request was being considered and asked us if we'd like to visit other places to get an overall picture of the textiles industry in Morocco. Before long, we were taxiing through one of the biggest industrial zones in Casablanca to get our first glimpse of the factory girls of Morocco.
Of Casablanca?
Well, officially it's around 3.5 to 4 million people. Yeah, and Casablanca is the biggest town in Morocco. The biggest airport is in Casablanca. It is basically the economic capital of Morocco.
What is the situation in terms of equality for women in Morocco? I believe that things are improving.
Exactly, things are really improving. Actually, after in 2004, the Moroccan Parliament approved a new family code that give women not the same rights, but almost the same rights than men. But between the law and its application, there is a long way to go.
type of noise associated with so many machines in operation at the one time. A big open floor of machines, a sight I thought I'd never see again. Automation hasn't taken this away yet from the manual power that is required to be a machinist. The skill, the time, the labour that's required, physical labour, to achieve the finished product of a company.
This is obviously the top end of the local garment industry, making trousers for the British market and paying workers the minimum wage of roughly €50 per week. The management here tells us that most Northern European companies won't source work from poorly run manufacturers with bad working conditions. They believe that they can survive by adapting to the ever-changing demands of the European fashion industry. Companies making simpler garments like t-shirts are already leaving Morocco to find cheaper labour elsewhere.
My name is Fatima and I'm 35 years old.
And have you worked in other factories before you came to work here?
Yes.
And one of the things, we're very, very impressed with the standards and the conditions in this factory.
Go on.
And do you have experience perhaps in other factories of different conditions?
Also, in the former company, the conditions were good.
And I suppose sometimes in our countries we don't appreciate that women are free to work in Arab societies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell, maybe she can tell me a bit about her, how do women, many women work here? And
I have to do all the things in the house plus the hours that I have to spend in the factory.
And so you have children as well, you have a family?
And the family, and the and the kulidat.
No,
I she said if you can propose a man, she will not say no.
I'd like to get an understanding of how important her earnings are for her family.
It is very, very important for the my parents are not working. And I have two brothers in school, so basically I have to give a big part of this income to my family to make the house run. But also I put some money aside for myself.
Good woman.
Wise lady.
I was just going to ask you about whether it is possible to raise a family on this wage and also to educate your children. Is it a survival wage? Is it a?
قلت لك واش هذا العمل اللي انت خدام فيه واش تعطيك الامكانيه انك تدير عائله ولا انك تدير عائله
لا ما كاينش باش ندير عائله غير باش نعيش.
He said that he can't make a family with this income. It's just for himself and for surviving himself.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. Merci
beaucoup. Before we leave Casablanca, Hisham takes us to meet a friend of his that works for the City Council's tax office. His job takes him to the backstreet garage-style operations, where manufacturers operate entirely outside the law. Here, workers consider themselves lucky to bring home half the legal minimum wage.
من المشاكل اللي كيعيشوهم العمال هو ما كاينش الغطاء التغطية الاجتماعية.
One of the biggest problems for the workers is they don't have any social security health coverage.
من ناحية الرواتب الشهرية يعني ضئيلة بزاف.
The monthly income is very, very low compared to the minimum wage. It's around 120 euros per month. And also the conditions of work are difficult because they have to work around 12 hours a day in a very difficult conditions, while the average hours must be 8 hours per day.
And tell me, what kind of women work in these conditions?
The first criteria of those women is poverty. And in general, because they're analphabets, they don't have any other choice. It's either they work, even if in those bad the conditions, but they got an income at the end, or they're going to stay in the house, which is worse.
When you say they're analphabet, they illiterate. Cannot read or write.
Exactly, yeah. He said that this is like being in between a rock and a hard place. At one hand, those kind of companies, they fill a space in terms of employment, because a lot of those people without education will not get any other job in another places or in a more structured company, and also they permit to a lower wage population to have access to clothes at a very low price, but in the same time it hurts the economy of the country.
The last leg of our journey took us to Rabat. Word had finally come through that we weren't allowed to visit Fruit of the Loom, Morocco, because we didn't submit our request first to Fruit of the Loom, Bunkrana. We wanted to see the place anyway, so we took a taxi across the river and drove through the back streets of Saleh. The place was dotted with small workshops open to the street, and here and there we spotted groups of women squatting outside factory entrances.
We're now witnessing the description that the tax inspector gave us yesterday of the small garage workplaces. I can't imagine anyone at home working in similar conditions. There are a number of people sitting around close to these workplaces, waiting to be called for work. They could sit here for hours on end and may never be called. This, I'm led to believe by our driver, is a shanty town. One of many, we're led to believe, in Morocco general. It is similar to what we would call a landfill site. Loads and loads of rubbish along the ground. It's flat ground. Children and adults within it. It's what you would see on TV in the news. The images, the plastic and cardboard and pieces of wood are all linked together to try and make some shape of a dwelling to live in. There's animals picking through the rubbish, children walking on top of it, and it isn't a nice sight.
What kind of work is there for the people that live in these very, very poor conditions?
ما خدامين ما والو ياك
بلوبار جالسين في الدار.
اه لا بلوبار جالسين فيهم باسكو يلاه تي مقابلين وليدات ديالهم ومعيش الرزق خصو يجي الماكله خصو.
موست اوف ذيم دي دونت هاف ا جوب. ماشي موست اوف ذيم ذا ماجوريتي they are not working, they are staying in the house taking care of like we see there, you know, taking care of the what we can't even call it a house of this barrack.
And we're living a life of
bidaiya. And they're having like a primal life, you know. There is
very basic conditions.
Yeah. No, there is no water, no electricity.
Are there schools in this area?
The
children.
Madaris kaini.
No, schools. As you may see, huh, they're working to go to school now. Yeah? They go to schools, but with the conditions, a lot of them drop out from school. You know? And he also says that they wait in the house for them. The husband to bring something, you know.
La machine.
I'm a machine operator.
In what kind of an operation?
In a نوع ديال لا ماشين واش ديال جين واش ديال واش
لا روب.
It's a machine for ropes, like lady dresses, lady ropes.
Yeah. And can you just ask her about what the conditions that she works?
عادي.
In a fair conditions.
I'm
paid nine dirhams per hour, which is the actual minimum wage.
Maybe you should give his idea about what it's like for a working woman here in Morocco living on the industrial wage.
It'll be
He's interfering by telling her to say the truth because it's just a journalist asking a question, and he also and she agrees that the conditions, you know, doesn't give them the opportunity to do much things, you know, like getting married or living a nice life.
Can you tell me, if her factory closes or if she loses her job, does she have any support from the state or how can she manage?
No support, and it's going to be hard for me to find another job. She was telling us that even if she's paid nine dirhams per hour, she doesn't have, they generally don't have enough hours per week or per month, so they're not having the 200 euros, and they end up with much less money. Plus, she said that the a lot of factories have closed nowadays, and the situation looks really, really bleak. The situation of the textile industry here in the town of Saleh, in the industrial zone of Saleh, looks bleak.
It's 2 p.m. and the shifts are changing at Fruit of the Loom. We decide to go there in case the taxi man sees anyone he recognises. I'm the third Irish reporter that's been refused access to Fruit of the Loom, Morocco in the last few years. We suspect that workers have been warned not to speak to us, and we don't want to get them into any trouble.
Blessed be the fruit of the loom.
We've parked just around the corner from the Fruit of the Loom plant here in Sallaig, and we've been sitting here for about half an hour watching women come into work for the 2 o'clock shift and leaving again. We've made some efforts discreetly to contact the women. Can you just tell me, Hisham, what the atmosphere is like here?
It is very hard to express this, but the workers are... we approached some workers personally and the taxi driver also. And from my experience, like I tried to, I didn't mention anything. I just, a journalist, I didn't mention the medium, which is radio. I didn't mention your nationality. We just want to ask you questions about the conditions of work in Fruit of the Loom. And they were scared. They were really scared. They were, no. And I said plainly, why? I say no, because we're scared. We don't want to lose our job.
دابا في هذا الحي الصناعي اللي معروفين احسن الشركات هي فروي.
But I want to say something very very important that in the industrial zone of Sallaig, it is well known that the best and the well organized company that give good wages for their employees is Fruit of the Loom.
Brady, you were anxious earlier on when the women were passing by that we don't in any way jeopardise anybody's position, that we be very discreet and all of that. What are your feelings here now?
Having worked in the company in Ireland, I have an idea of how strict the company can be in relation to speaking to the media. And I was fearful for the employees. But as you said, and as our interpreter said, they have nothing to fear. They're providing the Moroccans with the highest level of working conditions, and I don't understand where they're coming from. What have they to fear?
They were a good bunch, and there was a lot of them, and I mean a lot of them, had invested in their homes and had taken out mortgages and that. And to this day, I often wondered, you know, what happened to some of them? You know, sometimes I might see them on the street, but then there's a lot that I haven't met. The money was good at Fruit of the Loom, and some of them didn't finish school, but some of them did go back to school, took their degrees and got a good job out of it. And maybe, in a way, Fruit of the Loom was the makings of them, because they saw both sides of the coin.
You can only do a job for so long and then you get fed up. So the years started on there, most of the years started in Fulham, Bunkranna, were between 16 and 24 when I set up first. Most of them years now would be 30 to 38 or whatever. And I'm sure a lot of them have burned out these days, making T-shirts day and day. They say Donegal's a forgotten county, and it seems that way. But I hate to think that we were still making T-shirts here like we were 20 years ago. Because if we were, you know, where's the progress? You know, where is the progress there?
I probably wouldn't be in the position that I'm in today working with special needs children if I was still employed through the loom. I was disappointed, all right. I never thought I'd ever see that day coming, like most people. But I moved on. And as I said, I'm content.
I would only stand. wear and tear on them particular joints.
And is it work that you would have recommended to the next generation of young girls?
No. But I'll say that two girls here agree that's the best lesson in life. When you come out, you had a degree.
You did.
You might not have been photographed in the paper with your degree.
No.
But you did have a degree.
With a degree in a writer.
It was a crash course on life in general.
Definitely.
Blessed be.